Am I holding him at gunpoint right now?
Yeah, it's a big gun.
Oh, okay.
It's a big one.
Okay. Anyway, now that you guys have listened to that, what time is it? Oh, I can't even say good morning.
5:21.
It's literally almost 5:30 p.m. Okay, quick apology on my part. Also, wait, say hi to Addie, guys.
Hi, hello. It's so nice to meet you all.
Yeah, that's Addie. Okay, not important. So, I'm kidding.
Thank you.
I'm kidding. So, this was supposed to come out yesterday, but we were so busy this week that... She just kept being like, we should do research and record. And I was like, I don't want to. And then I was ready to do it yesterday. And then I took a nap. And then I felt like shit after my nap. So then we just didn't end up doing it. And then we both slept in till like, well, I slept until 10 o'clock this morning.
Until 2 p.m.
Yep.
So I've been awake for 3 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. So here we are. So what did we do this week? We went to, we went up,
You picked me up Tuesday.
Yep.
And we hung out. We did some errands on Wednesday. Thursday, we went to Lost River.
Yeah.
And we went to fun things.
We went to see the Betty and Barney Hill alien abduction site. Ooh, if you read the title of this. If you read the description of this episode, you know what you're in for. We're both going to do a story today. Mine's on the longer side, because... you know me. And it was supposed to be like one of those things where we each do a short one, but mine is 4 pages long and hers is like
it's
a page
also,
and a quarter.
Yeah, it's also kind of nice and worked out nicely though, because I am very new to all of this and I'm not very good at doing research, so
it's okay. It comes with time.
Yeah. And I was nervous to do this and do my own story anyway, so it works out that it's kind of on the shorter side to kind of ease into things.
Exactly, and hence why mine is a bit longer, just to kind of make it the full hour, even though I could probably make this topic probably in 3 hours, but we're gonna ignore that. And then, also, I forget what I was gonna say. Shit. Oh, we're each doing things that are both from, like, our home states.
Yeah.
Well, my home state is Mass, not New Hampshire, but... you know.
Same thing.
Same thing.
Same difference.
Same
and
thing.
Mine's New York, so.
All right. Okay, so the Betty and Barney Hill incident, which I'm covering, is the first recorded alien abduction, or the first popularized alien abduction to occur. And they kind of set the record for the typical gray aliens with bug eyes and wrinkly, creepy. Yeah, that was them. So, this is the process, because I don't have any thoughts. I just read.
Also, it does not help that
we share one single brain cell.
And we're both trying to do the same task right now, which means that we have to...
like, one of us is trying to focus, and the other one is trying to read, and the brain cell is just bouncing back and forth across the microphone, and it's probably, like, hitting it on the way.
It'll
so
be a
here...
miracle if we can get through this without any tangents. And
that's... okay, but if we go on tangents, which we're on right now, I'm going to leave them in, and you guys are going to have to suffer, so...
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Betty and Barney Hill, guys. So, I need to breathe for a second.
Let me get my giggles out.
Little baby.
I might
little
be
babies.
Going feral soon. I don't think that that's going to be very good for the task we're trying to accomplish right now. If you're not real, then why do I feel this way?
Little babies.
Little babies.
Little babies. Oh, Paisley came.
Oh,
Paisley, I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm ready. I'm good.
All right, well, also, Paisley's being a menace, so if you hear her, as usual, you know, she's in here. Betty Hill was born Eunice Elizabeth Barrett on June 28th, 1919 in New Hampshire. She was a social worker and a direct descendant of the pilgrims that arrived on the Mayflower on September 16th, 1620. And you should remember September 16th because it's an important date. And also, there's not much really known about their childhood or anything. It's all what happened during this whole thing. So, or during or after this whole thing. So, Barney Hill was born on July 20th, 1922 in Newport News, Virginia. At some point, he moved to New Hampshire. They got married. He was an employee of the United States Postal Service. He worked nights. It was very exhausting for him. And they lived in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And they were an interracial couple, which was very controversial in the 1960s. So that plays a big part later, but right now it's not really important. It's just something I needed to mention. Mm-hmm. The Hills were both members of the NAACP, and they were active in their local church. Barney also sat on a local board of the United States Commission of Civil Rights.
They did a lot.
Yeah, they did. They did a whole lot. They were very involved. Both worked, and they both did a lot of volunteer work.
Yeah.
And because they were so busy, they didn't take their honeymoon for 16 months.
Wow.
And one day, they just decided, we have the weekend off, we're going to go to Canada. So that's what they did for their honeymoon after 16 months. They were just so committed to pushing the civil rights movement forward that they just, like, didn't want to break from it if they didn't, want to leave if they didn't have to. They didn't want to skip meetings if they didn't have to. So they just...
Which I think tells a lot about their character.
Exactly. And so their honeymoon consisted of a drive through Montreal and Niagara Falls. And they left for the trip so abruptly, abruptly, that between the two of them, they had less than $70 in their pockets. So when they left for their honeymoon, they only had $70. The night of September 16th.
Yes. Yeah.
1961, 341 years after the Pilgrims came on the Mayflower, the couple stopped for a coffee at a Vermont diner and then left around 10 p.m. because they wanted to beat the oncoming hurricane, and they estimated that they'd be home around 2 a.m. So while driving on Route 3, where we were driving, where we saw, around 10:30 p.m., Betty noticed a light under the moon that then traveled above and west of the moon. So she saw it under the... I just hit the chair. It was under the moon, and then she saw it travel up and, like, west of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
She thought it was a shooting star that was moving upward and just a weird phenomenon. I mean, you can't explain it if it's... No one's ever heard of something like that before, right?
Right.
So then she noticed the star grew more erratic, bigger, and brighter. So Betty asked Barney to stop the car to get a better look because, listen, they also had to walk their dog, Delcy.
Delcy was this dog's name?
Yes. Delcy.
Poor Delcy.
They're like, you know what? There's a big-ass star in the sky that's, like, hurtling towards us. Let's walk my dog.
You know what? If anything, we gotta make sure the dog poops before.
Seriously.
Anything.
Don't shit in my car. So, using the they carried, like, binoculars in their car, probably because they were at Niagara Falls.
Mm-hmm.
Betty got a closer look at the star, and she observed an odd-shaped craft with flashing multicolored lights flying across the moon. Betty began believing it was an extraterrestrial spacecraft because her sister had confided in her that she saw one a few years earlier.
So, question. At this point, had there been sightings, but this case was just one that was significant because
I think there were sightings, but there were no abductions.
Gotcha.
So this is the first, as far as I know, it is the first documented abduction and publicized abduction.
Right. So they, like, knew about these weird spacecraft.
Yeah, there were already, we'll get to it later, but there's already, not clubs, but these groups that, it's like an organized group, and they investigate. It was part of NASA as well.
Oh, wow.
And I'll get into that more later, but yeah, there's groups and stuff that are trying to, like, come up with a logical explanation as to what people thought their UFO sightings were.
Right.
But this was the first abduction.
Gotcha. Okay.
So up until this point, we had never seen aliens.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's see. So Barney, being a very logical man, thought it was a plane, but he quickly changed his mind because the aircraft had quickly begun to descend in their direction.
Creepy.
Yep. The couple got back into their car and started driving toward Franconia Notch. They continued driving as the object had neared closer and closer to them, and Betty claimed that the aircraft measured about 60 feet in diameter, and it was silent, rotating, and bouncing from left to right.
Weird.
So imagine, like, a 60-foot, just giant
metal disc, like, vibrating in the air above you.
Yeah, but silent. Right. Like, you've heard an airplane. Like, if I heard an airplane go, or saw an airplane go over me and it made no noise, I would shit my pants.
Freak out, yeah.
Silence is so terrifying to me. So, yeah, it was also a silent disc, which is disgusting. A little while later, the aircraft rapidly descended towards their vehicle, compelling Barney to stop in the middle of the highway and park the car.
That sounds like a very smart and such a bad idea to do, sir.
Right. So the aircraft stopped about 80 feet above their car, but it was so big that it filled the entire view of their windshield. Barney said that it resembled a giant pancake. Yeah, so Barney then just gets out of the car, and he approached the object with his pistol in his pocket, thinking that was going to help. And using the binoculars, identified between 8 and 11 humanoid figures with glossy black uniforms and black caps.
Weird. Oh my god. Like, it's already weird enough that there's this giant 60-foot metal silent disc above your car, and then you stop to go to get a closer look, and you, like, make eye contact with these weird,
11
like,
humanoids in sexy pleather.
Yeah, like these kinky little aliens that are into latex.
Oh my god.
Weird.
We're never getting through this. Holy shit. Okay. So, one of the figures telepathically said to Barney, stay where you are and keep looking. Like, without moving its mouth, just, like, communicated through thoughts. Oh my god. Apparently, they had more brain cells than we do, but it's okay. Wings with red lights began to span out of the sides of the aircraft, and a long structure descended from underneath it. Barney ran back into the car and told Betty, they're going to capture us. They began driving again, but soon heard loud and rhythmic beeping from the car's trunk. They became drowsy and lost consciousness.
So they weren't, like, they didn't consume anything, like, this just happened?
Unless there was, like, poison in that coffee. Or, like, LSD in their coffee from the diner.
Yeah. That's so creepy.
So the next thing they remembered was 2 hours later when they returned to consciousness over 35 miles away from where they saw the aircraft.
Wow.
The Hills arrived home around dawn the next day and could not explain their new impulses or behaviors. The drive home took 7 hours when it should have only taken 4. Betty insisted, these are their behaviors, Betty insisted that the luggage be kept near the back door rather than in the main part of the house, like their bedroom or anything, mm-hmm. instead of putting it away. Mm-hmm. It had to be at the back door. Their watches that they were wearing never worked again. The leather strap on their binoculars was torn. The toes of Barney's dress shoes were all scraped up. They weren't just, like, scuffed. They were, like, scratched and scraped up.
Yeah.
Barney was also compelled to examine his genitals in the bathroom, but found nothing out of the ordinary.
Weird.
They both took extremely long showers to remove contamination, and then they each drew pictures of what they had seen.
Right.
Another thing that they noticed is that the car's trunk had a shiny target-shaped design on it after the incident.
On the outside or the inside?
On the outside. Like, on top of the trunk. And they were experimenting, like, with magnets to see if, like, what would happen, and mm-hmm. they were using a compass. So when they put the compass close to the target shape on the car's trunk, the needle would spin in circles very rapidly, mm-hmm. but as soon as you pulled it away, it would just work normally.
Oh my god, that's weird.
Yeah.
It's also, sorry, really quick.
No,
it's also weird that, like, you mentioned that they had to take long showers to, like, remove contaminants, but, like,
but they don't remember anything.
Right, exactly. So, yeah. like, they just, like, felt, and they, these actions were abnormal enough for them to recognize that, which is also just so creepy and strange to me. It's like subconsciously you're realizing these things, but you still have no idea what
exactly
happened to you.
Exactly. And we'll get into it because they start to remember later. Mm-hmm. So Betty noticed that the dress she had worn the night of the abduction had been torn at the hem, zipper, and lining. So basically it was not wearable. Like, she threw it out and then took it back out of the trash for, like, research reasons. Mm-hmm. But she also noticed there was a strange, unidentified pink powder on her dress. Over the years, 5 different labs have tested the dress and the powder, but were inconclusive.
Alien glitter.
Alien glitter. I'm telling... Strippers, am I right?
Honestly, though? Or alien rave?
Oh.
Do you think they play EDM in space?
Probably.
They seem like it.
Maybe they watch Bob's Burgers, too.
Let's hope so.
Let's hope they're smart enough for that. Actually, that would probably lower their IQ. Anyway, So, 10 days after the incident, exactly 10 days after, Betty began having very vivid dreams about the encounter, but after 5 nights, they abruptly stop, and she never had another dream about it again. On September 21st, Betty reported the encounter to the Air Force, but withheld some details in fear of being called crazy. Basically, they just said to her, like, oh, that was Jupiter. You just saw Jupiter that night.
And yeah, Jupiter took me and threw some pink glitter on me.
Right.
I don't think Jupiter's that
Jupiter's
cool.
Sexy aliens threw pink glitter on me. On September 26th, Betty wrote to the NICAP, I guess I'll just call it. It's the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. So when I looked that up, it had the NASA logo on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might be like an affiliate of them. And she included all the details her and Barney could remember. On October 21st, the Hills met up with Walter Webb, who was a Boston astronomer and a member of NICAP. And Barney admitted in an interview with him that he had developed a mental block and there were things he did not want to remember, which is a very natural...
Mm-hmm. Excuse me? That is so rude. I'm gonna vacuum the ceiling. So sick of this.
So as my neighbors are screaming upstairs, I'm just gonna continue. That's what the weird pause was for. So I think as I was saying... that Barney kind of blocking shit out is a very natural trauma response.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see that as weird, but skeptics will be like, it's because it didn't happen. And it's like, shut up. Don't talk to me.
Do not gaslight this man.
Do not gaslight. Well, I'll get there.
Okay.
Webb was the guy that interviewed the Hills. He stated that they were telling the truth and the incident probably occurred exactly as reported, except for, and this is a quote, for some minor uncertainties and technicalities that must be tolerated in any such observations where human judgment is involved. Basically, he's saying it happened, but the only thing that wouldn't be completely real are things like exact time and length of visibility, apparent sizes of the object, occupants, the amount of occupants in the object, distance and height of the object, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So all that stuff, just like regular human... What's the word?
Like human error.
Yes.
Almost.
Yes,
kind
yes,
of
yes,
like
yes.
when
That's
you a have good. A witness to a crime and
yes.
they may not remember the exact details, mm-hmm. but the general gist is there.
Yes, exactly. So that's what he was saying, is that it all was very real to them. Like, psychologically, it definitely did happen. It's just that there were human errors
yeah.
here and there that just may not have added up.
Right.
So... It wasn't until November that Betty began writing down what occurred in her dreams. So she waited, like, over a month.
Right.
Or a month and a half.
The 5 dreams that she had in those consecutive nights is what she's writing down now?
Yeah. Okay. So she finally wrote those down in November. And then I took this whole thing from Wikipedia because there was a lot in it that I didn't want to leave out or paraphrase. So I just wanted to, like, put it all in there and say it all. So I'm just going to read it to you. In one dream, she and Barney encountered a roadblock and men who surrounded their car. She lost consciousness, but struggled to regain it. Then she realized that she was being forced by 2 small men to walk in a forest at night, and of seeing Barney walking behind her, though when she called to him, he seemed to be in a trance or sleepwalking.
Mm.
The men stood about 5 feet to 5'4" and were wearing matching blue uniforms with caps similar to those worn by military cadets. They appeared nearly human, with black hair, dark eyes, prominent noses, and bluish lips. Their skin was a grayish color.
Oh, weird. I don't like that.
Yeah, I don't either. In the dreams, Betty, Barney, and the men walked up a ramp into a disc-shaped craft of metallic appearance. Once inside, Betty and Barney were separated. She protested and was told by a man she called the leader that if she and Barney were examined together, it would take much longer to conduct the exams. She and Barney were then taken to separate rooms. Betty then dreamt that a new man, similar to the others, entered to conduct her exam with the leader. Betty called this new man the examiner and said that he had a pleasant, calm manner.
Hmm.
Though the leader and the examiner spoke to her in English, the examiner's command of the language seemed imperfect and she had difficulty understanding him.
Mm-hmm.
The examiner told Betty that he would conduct a few tests to note the difference between humans and the craft's occupants. He seated her on a chair and a bright light was shown on her. Oh my god, and a bright light was shown on her. The man cut off a lock of Betty's hair. He examined her eyes, ears, mouth, teeth, throat, and hands. He saved trimmings from her fingernails. After examining her legs and feet, the man used a dull knife, similar to a letter opener, to scrape some of her skin onto what resembled cellophane. He then tested her nervous system, and he thrust the needle into her navel, which caused Betty agonizing pain, whereupon the leader waved his hand in front of her eyes, and the pain vanished.
Oh my god.
Yep. The examiner left the room, and Betty engaged in conversation with the leader. She picked up a book with rows of strange symbols that the leader said she could take home with her. She also asked from where he came, and he pulled down an instructional map dotted with stars. In Betty's dream account, the men began escorting the hills from the ship when a disagreement broke out. The leader then informed Betty that she couldn't keep the book, stating that they had decided that the other men did not want her to even remember the encounter. Mm. Betty insisted that no matter what they did to her memory, she would one day recall the events.
Mm.
She and Barney were taken to their car, where the leader suggested that they wait to watch the craft's departure. They did so, and then resumed their drive. So that's what happened that night, according to Betty's dreams.
Right.
Which is, like, very, very, very detailed.
Yeah. And very vivid.
Right.
Like, that is a lot of...
Okay, as crazy as it sounds, it seems cohesive, because my dreams are, like, all over the place.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Because in my dreams, I'm in, like, three places at one time. And right. People, like, I don't know. People don't stay the same. Like, right. You could be in my dream, and then the next minute I blink, and it's Justin, and it's still the same conversation.
And, right. And conversations in dreams also sometimes are very, like, they do not make sense. Like, in the dream, they make sense.
Right.
But thinking about them out of context, they are kind of all over the place. But
exactly.
This, like, this it's sequence of events. Coherent. Right. And interactions between these different characters in her dreams.
Right.
Is, could very well have happened.
So on September 7th, 1963, Captain Ben Sweat, it's S-W-E-T-T though, not like sweaty.
S-W-E-T-T, got it.
Sweat.
Got it.
Right? Is that like sweat?
Yeah.
So he spoke at the Hills Church about hypnosis, and the Hills were talking, I don't know why he would go
weird
to the church.
Church.
And it's, yeah, there were, Unitarian, is that how you say it?
I couldn't tell you.
Oh, it's basically, they were the type of Christian, I don't want to say type, but there's a break off of Christianity where it's not the Father, Son, Holy Spirit.
Right.
It's that, like, Jesus was his own person and not an offspring of God, and God is the only higher being.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, so that was their religion, but I don't know what that has to do with hypnosis, but...
They found some sort of correlation in their little religion to find hypnosis in there.
I don't know. So, anyway, yeah, so Ben Sweat was talking about hypnosis at the church. I don't know why, but it caught Benny and Barney's attention. And so Ben was like, you should talk to your psychiatrist about hypnosis. And then, because he was only, like an apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't a professional. And so he was like, to really, considering your experience and, like, your trauma, you really should see a real professional about this.
Mm-hmm.
So Barney talked to his psychiatrist, who sent him to Benjamin Simon on January 4th, 1964 for their first hypnosis session. They continued these sessions until June 6th. So then I have another thing from Wikipedia because, yeah. So yeah, this is all from Wikipedia. This is about the hypnosis. So, Simon hypnotized Barney first. Barney said that due to his fear, he kept his eyes closed for much of the abduction and physical examination. Also, mm-hmm. I did want to say I did cut some of this out because there was just so much that was not quite necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So, I tried to make this a little shorter so we're not here forever. Under hypnosis, Barney reported that the binocular strap had broken when he ran from the UFO back to his car.
Mm-hmm.
He recalled driving the car away from the UFO, but that afterwards he felt irresistibly compelled to pull off the road and drive into the woods.
Weird.
He eventually sighted six men standing in the dirt road. The car stalled and three of the men approached the car. They told Barney not to fear them. He reported that the leader told Barney to close his eyes. While hypnotized, Barney said, I felt like the eyes had pushed into my eyes.
Oh, I hate that. I yeah. hate that. I
eyes freak
don't
me out.
Like that.
They freak me out.
I don't like that at all.
Yeah, there's more about eyes. I'm so sorry.
So it was these aliens that told him, basically, like, shut your eyes, man. We're gonna try to make this easy on you, so...
We're just
gonna close your eyes with our eyes, and...
Yeah, because I didn't want him to be scared.
Yeah. Which, I mean, very considerate of them.
But also, what the fuck is happening
right
now?
Do not touch my eyes with your eyes, sir. Please
you're gonna give
keep
me
that
pink
latex
eye.
Away from me. I know that we're trying to have a good time
He was
here,
smizing but... at him. I gave Ollie my pink eye.
I have a fun cushion.
I have a fun cushion. Jesus Christ.
Moving on.
We're doing voodoo. Under hypnosis. Sorry. Nope. Wrong section. Barney described the beings as generally similar to Betty's recollection, but only under Betty's hypnosis, which I will get to later. Because in her dreams, they had hair, but like they were different. So I'll explain that. Mm-hmm. So the beings often stared into his eyes with a terrifying, mesmerizing effect. Under hypnosis, Barney said things like, "Oh, those eyes, they're there in my brain." And he also said, "I was told to close my eyes because I saw two eyes coming close to mine, and I felt like the eyes had pushed into my eyes." And another thing he said about the eyes was, "All I see are these eyes. I'm not even afraid that they're not connected to a body. They're just there. They're just up close to me, pressing against my eyes."
Sustained eye contact.
No.
They were just trying to have an intimate moment.
Intimate moment with the strippers. The stripper aliens.
They're
like, look me in the eye when I am twerking on you.
They wanted to get a better view of his soul. So it's more than just looking into his eyes. They had to connect
how we do we just
eye.
Stare at each other until the brain cell bounces back and forth enough that we understand. Oh my god. Okay.
Weird.
Barney also said that he and Betty were taken onto the aircraft where they were separated. He was escorted to a room by three of the men and told to lie on a small rectangular exam table. Barney's narrative of the exam was less detailed than Betty's, as he continued to keep his eyes closed for most of the exam. Mm-hmm. A cup-like device was placed over his genitals, hence why he felt the need to examine them.
Right.
He did not experience an orgasm, though he suspected that a sperm sample had been taken.
Oh.
The men scraped his skin and peered in his ears and mouth. A thin tube was inserted into his anus and quickly removed. Someone felt his spine and seemed to be counting his vertebrae. I don't know, because I've heard in some sources that they, like, went under his skin and touched his spine, and I'm like... Ew. I don't know. I don't want to think about it. I don't like spines.
No. I don't like the fact that that just made me think about the fact that my bones are wet.
Ew. Addie, I'm going to need you to stop.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You're having like an existential crisis right now?
It's just like, it's just a lot. Like, it's one thing to like be examined, and it's another thing to... Because these aliens are obviously trying to get a very clear and detailed picture about what human beings are and how we're, you know, made and whatever. Just, like, so invasive.
Yeah.
Both emotionally and physically.
Physically. There's more, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Betty reported a conversation with the leader that she understood in English. Barney said that he heard them speaking in a mumbling language and he did not understand, yet he also understood them in English. Betty also mentioned this detail. The few times they communicated with him, Barney said it seemed to be thought transference at the time. At the time, he was unfamiliar with the word telepathy. Both Betty and Barney stated that they hadn't observed the beings' mouths moving when they communicated in English with them.
But they did have mouths.
Yes, they just didn't move them.
Okay.
When you're a mouth breather but not a mouth talker. That wasn't even funny. I don't know why you're laughing.
Why have mouth
when communicating with brain? He recalled being escorted from the ship, taken to his car, and watched the ship leave. He also stated that he attempted to produce the code-like buzzing sound, which seemed to strike the car's trunk a second time by driving from side to side and stopping and starting the vehicle. Mm. His attempt was unsuccessful, so he couldn't recreate the sound that was coming out of the trunk.
And when the spacecraft first was...
Yes, so remember earlier I was telling you how they heard, like, this rhythmic noise coming from their trunk?
Yeah.
He could not recreate it.
But this noise then must have been something that they were not familiar with.
No.
If they couldn't recreate it.
No.
So weird.
But it also could have been where the target thing came from.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, under hypnosis, Betty's account was similar to her five dreams about the UFO abduction, with some notable differences, mainly pertaining to her capture and release. Also, the technology on the craft was different. The short men differed significantly in physical appearance, and the sequential order of the abduction differed. Barney's and Betty's memories in hypnotic regression were, however, consistent with one another.
Mm-hmm.
Betty exhibited considerable emotional distress when recounting her capture and examination. Simon ended one session early because tears were flowing down her cheeks. Simon gave Betty the post-hypnotic suggestion that she could sketch a copy of the star map that she later described as a three-dimensional projection similar to the hologram. So that was in the book that the being wanted to give her.
Right.
And then they were like, no.
Right.
Though the map she saw had many stars, she drew only those that stood out in her memory. Her map consisted of 12 prominent stars connected by lines and three lesser ones that formed a distinctive triangle. She said she was told the stars connected by solid lines formed... Wait, what? I'm sorry. Okay. So the stars connected by solid lines formed trade routes, whereas dashed lines were less traveled stars.
Mm-hmm.
So these were stars that these beings were traveling to and shit like that.
Right.
After the sessions, Simon believed that Barney's recollection of the encounter may have been heavily inspired by Betty's dreams and how much she talked about what she saw.
Right.
But at that point, Barney had already gone through so much that he was like, no, this really happened. Like, he wasn't really believing of it at first until he went under hypnosis, and that's right. when it really hit him.
I think it would also be different, too, if their stories were exactly the same, but
right.
because there were differences in her dreams and her telling and his right. hypnosis, I feel like that's too much of a coincidence to...
Right. And for him to have a vivid recollection of what they did to him and have it be right. so different than what they did to her.
Right.
So the differences in the hypnosis, because it wasn't in, like, the Wikipedia page is very reliable, like, contrary to popular belief, but it did cite all of the sources. They're all reliable, but basically, they were in the pleather suits in the hypnosis. They were gray, big eyes, communicated telepathically, and they were bald.
Right.
And when Betty's dream, they had hair. So it's
right.
like, dreams are not reliable whatsoever either, so... I mean, not unreliable, but also dreams are fucking crazy anyway,
yeah.
I guess is my point,
yeah.
so...
I picture them all with Justin Bieber haircuts.
I need you to stop talking.
Okay.
I'm kidding, I love you so much. No, but that's what I mean. It's like, for their hypnosis to be similar...
Right.
I feel like would be more reliable than anything.
Right.
Because dreams are whack.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot that goes on in the human brain that we don't know.
Unfortunately. I mean, not much goes on in ours, but, you know. So, yeah. And that's pretty much everything about, like, what they saw and everything that was recorded. So, in 1968, an elementary school teacher who was super interested in astronomy, she became interested in the abduction, and she tried to match Betty's star map with another star system to try and locate where it was.
Mm-hmm.
After several years of studying, she noted that the star map Betty drew matched the double star system of Zeta Reticuli.
So Betty had drawn something that already
she had never seen.
Right.
Yeah,
and already
but it
existed. Weird.
And the book that she found it in, I heard this in some sources, not all of them, but I heard that the book that she matched Zeta Reticuli didn't come out until after the abduction and after Betty had drawn that picture.
Wow.
Zeta Reticuli was founded a very long time ago, but I don't think it was recorded in a book until
right.
the 60s.
Right.
Or 70s, early 70s.
Crazy.
Like I said, that's not... Don't quote me on that, because that was one of those things where I heard in multiple sources,
mm-hmm.
so it's a little... So, Astronomy Magazine published those findings, and... To this day, people have varying opinions on whether or not it is the same star map, which, if you look at the pictures, it's exactly the same. But someone said if you take the lines out of the pictures, they don't match up at all. And I'm like, but you also can't... Someone's drawing in memory isn't going to be exact.
Right.
to, like, unless you're copying it, it's not going to be exact. They're not artists. You've seen the pictures that they drew of the aliens. They're not artists.
And let's also cut this woman some slack, because like, it seems like she's been through a lot.
Seriously.
Let's give her some credit where credit is due, okay?
Seriously. So, yeah, I don't know. I hate skeptics sometimes. Mm-hmm. So psychiatrists later, this is where the racism really is hefty, and this was like in the 90s, and I'm just like, shut the fuck up. Psychiatrists later suggested that the abduction was hallucinated by the Hills because they were under a lot of stress due to being an interracial couple.
Excuse me? Way to just completely like invalidate everything that they went through
between probably getting a bunch of shit for being an interracial couple already, the trauma that they went through with literally getting their spines fingered by creepy alien salad fingers.
They'll finger anything with the balls.
They'll finger anything with the balls. It's like, just shut up. Leave them alone.
Also, that is the stupidest excuse I've ever heard. Like, you Addie, really
Did you feel so much stress from being in an interracial relationship?
Oh, my, I was definitely
Did you hallucinate UFOs?
More than likely, yes. You know, now that I think about it, it was so stressful.
So stressful that you hallucinated UFOs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's normal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, poor Betty, though. Betty was, like, she was not the same after this. Like, she became obsessed. She wrote a book, which is on sale at that gas station that I showed you, which mm-hmm. I don't want to buy it. I just don't have an interest in reading. But yeah. Not that I don't have an interest in reading that. I just don't like reading in general. So, yeah, Betty just kind of deteriorated mentally after this.
Fell off the rocker a little bit.
I don't blame her. I don't. It's like, when you see something like that and no one believes you, you just feel crazy.
Yeah.
And so, sorry, what?
Quick question. So, I know that Barney had, like, his eyes shut by the aliens. Did she also go through that? Or was she, like, conscious? Or, I guess, like, had her eyes open?
She was awake. Oh. Which is why she could recall more.
Yeah.
It's not that she was awake. She had her eyes open. And I don't know, because Barney also said that he was compelled to go towards it.
Right.
So,
and she seemed to be a little bit more resistant. Am I wrong about that? Or is there not enough
information? I don't think either of them were really resistant. They were just so overpowered.
Yeah.
They definitely, I want to say they did more experiments on her.
Mm-hmm.
They put her through a lot more pain. But she suffered the most mentally out of this.
Yeah.
So, what ended up happening is that she became so obsessed with UFOs and extraterrestrials, it got to the point where she couldn't differentiate between streetlights and UFOs. And she would be like, oh, that's UFO, and it was a streetlight. And then she became less credible because she thought everything was UFO. She would go on UFO hunts 3 days a week.
Oh my god.
She became very obsessed.
Yeah.
Which is understandable.
Yeah.
It's completely understandable.
Yeah.
Well,
especially because I feel like an experience like that's going to bring out a lot of questions.
Right.
And if you're already mentally not doing well,
right,
then that is like...
Well, something that didn't help is that Barney died of a brain bleed in 69. So... Not even, I think, like, 7 or 8 years later.
Oh, man.
So that was not helpful in the situation to help her mental health. So that really sucked.
Yeah.
In 1990, an article was published that suggested Barney's account of the extraterrestrials were influenced by an episode of The Outer Limits that had aired 2 weeks before his first hypnotic session. They also had never watched the show before.
Mm-hmm.
Barney and Betty had never watched that show before. Also, if you look at the sketches that Barney and Betty drew and the renderings that sketch artists have done, they do not look the same whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as I said, Barney passed away in 1969 from a cerebral hemorrhage, and Betty died of cancer on October 17th, 2004.
Wow.
And that is the story of Betty and Barney Hill. I also don't know what happened to that dog.
Ugh.
I have no clue.
I forgot about the dog.
How dare you?
I'm so sorry.
I'm sure if the dog, like, did not make it back in the car, I would have known about it. Or found out about it. I'm sure the dog made it home and died of natural causes eventually.
I wonder if the aliens had any interest in the dog at all.
Probably not. They're probably like, what is this ugly thing?
No.
No, I know, but I feel like, we think aliens are ugly, so aliens probably think we're ugly.
Why didn't they hypnotize the dog? Hello?
Oh.
A witness.
Make it, like, Doug from Up. So, yeah, that's everything on that. That's that.
That's so sad, though, that so many people doubted them afterwards. Like,
yeah.
Imagine going through something so traumatic and, like, literally going crazy about it, and then nobody believes you because you're going crazy about it.
Right.
Like, that just sucks.
And, like, even if it was a hallucination or something, it's still a traumatizing thing to think that happened to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, I don't think anyone really cared about her mental health, Betty right. specifically, because Barney
well,
died
it's also
short
that,
after.
That time, I mean, not
yeah, but
that
she was alive till 2004. Like
right.
she was,
but there's still
she had
a
lost
lot
it.
Of. I know there's still a lot of stigma around mental health,
of
especially
course.
Around the time that it happened. So like,
I don't know. It just makes me mad that so many people were like, "Oh, they're crazy,"
right.
but no one helped her.
Right. Yeah.
No one
That's
helped
really
her.
Sad. Well, thank you, Betty and Barney Hill, for
I know that. Okay, can we just talk about that historic marker real quick?
Yeah.
Okay, it's at a motel, first of all, which kind of threw me off because I thought it was going to be... They didn't put the marker there until 2011. It's in Lincoln, New Hampshire, but it threw me off because it's literally on the lawn of a motel.
Mm-hmm.
But going there was the creepiest thing,
It was creepy, but I also felt, like, this sense of curiosity.
Yes,
like,
yes, yes.
This weird sense of, like, this is really creepy, and I, like, the energy felt so different.
Right.
But it was also, like... It opened up, like, this experience that they had opened up so many more possibilities for what could be out there.
Right.
And, like, that's huge. Like, and,
right.
and standing there, I was just in awe of, like, wow, like, this is the first known abduction. Like, what else is out there that we don't know about?
Right.
And I think it's so interesting. Like, this stuff, like, really piques my interest because I don't know. I really, truly believe that there are probably smarter and, you know, smarter creatures out there than us.
Yeah.
We are definitely not alone in this universe.
No,
it's too,
not in the slightest.
Too
it's
big.
Too big.
Yeah, it's just crazy. I also think about why they chose them, you know?
Yeah.
They were so progressive for their time,
mm-hmm.
and they did so much for civil rights during
right.
that time.
Right,
so,
right,
like,
right.
were they chosen for a specific reason? Was it just
right,
right
well, considering
wrong place, right time?
The date and her sister had seen a
yeah.
UFO
yeah.
previously. It's like,
super interesting.
Very, and yeah, and, you know, I was talking to my boyfriend about it. He's like, I believe in extraterrestrials, but why the hell would they come to New Hampshire? And I, like, just driving up there, because it's October now, but in September back then is when the leaves started to change, because global warming's a bitch. And it's so beautiful that they probably just saw, like, these Skittle-looking mountains and were like, ooh, that's cute.
This is a great place to throw a rave.
Great place. Yes. So, yeah.
I'm nervous. Let me drink some water.
There's no reason for you to be nervous. You got it.
I know, but this is something new for me.
I know.
And if I'm not immediately good at it, I'm giving up.
You're going to be good at it. Your witty charm is just amazing. Well, what story are you going to tell me today?
So today I'm going to talk about Hessian Lake, also known as Blood Lake. Very fitting for October.
Spooky.
So this lake is located in Bear Mountain State Park. I used to run cross country there. And let me just tell you, the vibes at this place are super creepy, especially this time of year. We used to have a race every single year, and we would always have to run there, and it was like my quickest pace was around that lake because we had to do a loop twice around it, and I just
you're like, I just gotta get the hell out of here.
Gotta get out of here. Yeah. So Bear Mountain State Park is in like kind of southern New York, but
okay,
but a little bit like north. The best way I can explain it is just kind of like,
do you just have the city name or the town name?
It's in Rockland and Orange County.
Okay.
Which I live in Orange County.
Okay.
So
triangulate your location.
Oopsies. So the mountain range around the lake used to be occupied by Native Americans. I'm going to give a little bit of history about this because I feel like this is an important part that gets left out a lot about this area.
So the mountain range used to be occupied by Native Americans from the Lenni Lenape Nation. The tribe that used to inhabit the land were called the Wawrenecks, and the village stood at the edge of Sinapink Lake, which is what Hessian Lake used to be called.
Okay.
There's a lot of names for this lake, so if it gets confusing, just know it's all the same place.
It's all the same place. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
So colonists, when they arrived to this area, called these people the Esopus people. And there were a series of wars from September 1659 to September 1663 between the Esopus tribe and the colonists. And they were called the Esopus Wars.
Okay.
After these wars took place, the tribe ended up selling a lot of the land to French Huguenot refugees. And these set of wars, along with other disputes and wars against Dutch and French settlers and other tribes, caused the Lenni Lenape Nation to have a bunch of casualties.
Okay.
Those who were left of the tribe relocated to western New York near Oneida Lake, which is up and west, west of New York. And when the Indian removal treaties were enacted in the 1800s, the people were displaced and forced to move to uninhabitable land in Wisconsin.
That sucks.
Yeah.
The fuck is that?
Yeah. And now descendants of the Esopus people live on a reservation in Shawano County, Wisconsin. So
they got something at least.
Yeah.
It still sucks.
Yeah. It's really upsetting.
Yeah,
but
that's
I thought
awful.
That was an important piece of history.
It is.
In 1775, two forts, Fort Montgomery and Fort Clinton, were put up in order to guard and block the Hudson River. Fort Montgomery is still there as a historical landmark, but Fort Clinton was destroyed in the 1920s to build the Bear Mountain Bridge and Route 9 West. And the site is now home, Fort Clinton is now home to the Trailside Museum and the zoo.
Nice.
That is at Bear Mountain. On October 6, 1777, during the Revolutionary War, a battle took place near the lake, and the battle was between the British Redcoats and German Hessians against American Patriots.
Okay.
The British and Hessian troops were led by Colonel Campbell, and the American Patriots were led by Colonel Beverly Robinson. The two troops took routes, like, kind of in that mountain range, behind Bear Mountain, and eventually met up near Sinapink Lake, which at the time also went by the name Slaughter Hole.
Great.
Yeah.
Fitting.
Very fitting. And there was also, like, people who were very superstitious thought that the lake was bottomless because of the whirlpool that was underneath it, and it was also called Hell Hole.
What causes a whirlpool in a lake? Do you know?
I don't know. Again, this could be completely wrong, but I feel like it might have something to do with, like, inner lake currents or just the way, I don't know.
Even just the way, like, the ground is formed underneath
right,
it?
Yeah. Okay. Like, there's something, like, in this lake that is just, makes it seem like it's bottomless.
Okay. I mean, that's terrifying in itself.
Yeah.
Like, water is horrifying.
Yeah.
Large bodies of water terrify me in general.
And, like, to this day, like, no one is allowed to swim or canoe or anything in the lake because there have been multiple drownings in it because of this whirlpool. Yeah.
Fuck that.
And also, it's just super creepy.
It's just a portal to hell, I'm convinced.
Yeah. So, the Americans were very outnumbered, but they put up a very good fight. This was a brutal battle. The Americans lost, but they were able to take out approximately 200 British and Hessian soldiers.
Wow.
The bodies and the limbs of the soldiers were disposed of in the lake, and this caused the lake to turn red with blood.
Oh my God.
This is where the lake gets the name Bloody Lake.
That's
and
horrible. Like, so terrifying.
Gruesome. And to make it worse, this is a quote I took from an article in Men's Journal about this lake. It says, Timothy Dwight, who went on to become president of then Yale College, revealed the horrors of the lake after visiting its battlefield. Quote, this is what Timothy Dwight said.
Okay.
We found at a small distance from Fort Montgomery a pond of moderate size in which we saw the bodies of several men who had been killed in the assault upon the fort.
Jesus.
They were thrown into this pond the preceding autumn by the British when probably the water was sufficiently deep enough to cover them. Some were still covered at this time, but at a depth so small as to leave them distinctly visible. Others had an arm, a leg, a part of the body above the surface. Their faces were bloated and monstrous, and their postures were uncouth and distorted.
No, thank you. I'm all set.
Disgusting.
I'm all set.
Yeah. So...
Well, that's because water, if a dead body's left in the water, like, it turns to soap.
Yeah.
And, like, that's what causes the...
And they were already starting to decompose before they were even put into the lake. So, just a whole lot of gross.
Stop. Disgusting. Yeah.
A whole lot of gross. It was renamed Hessian Lake. Very fitting. Sometime after the event, but its gruesome history will always remain. There have been sightings in the area of the lost souls of the Hessian soldiers. Growing up, I would hear stories about the soldiers wandering around near the lake, mm-hmm. especially this time of year, and just trying to find some resting place, I'm sure. One person claims to have seen a ghost of a Hessian soldier with missing limbs and glowing eyes.
Jesus Christ.
So,
I don't like
very,
that.
Very unsettling and spooky.
I don't
spooky.
Like it. Thank you, Addie.
Thank you.
Oh my god. All right. Wow. Yeah, that's creepy. Because I know you wanted me to go with you, so I'll have to go.
Yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful place.
I'm sure it is.
I love going there. I mean, I have a lot of...
Thank you, Paisley.
I have a lot of fond memories there. I would always go growing up, and I ran there every single year for... Excuse me.
My dog is snoring, guys. Ma'am. I'm so sorry.
But yeah, whenever we'd go there and run, we'd always be like, oh, careful of the soldiers. They're gonna come and grab you. While
That's
you're
terrifying.
Running.
So basically, it's just, like, a haunted lake because so many bodies were just dumped in there
yep.
and not laid to rest.
Yep.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
No, thank you. I'm all set.
Don't worry, we'll go
oh
there
my god.
One day.
Are they still, like, in there?
Oh, yeah. Probably.
Oh, god.
Most likely. Like,
oh, yeah,
because
people
the bottom.
Can't, probably couldn't go in and retrieve them.
Yeah. I mean, they were put there to be disposed of, so I don't imagine that. Especially because how, like, dangerous the lake is already. Like, you would want to go in there and try to retrieve anything.
Oh, of course not.
So.
Absolutely not. No, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm all set.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks for that. I hated it. I loved it, but I hated it.
Yeah.
Wow. Holy shit. Wow.
Well, thanks for having me on here.
Yeah, thank you for being here for this whole week and dealing with my bullshit.
Thank you for helping me learn how to be social again.
Me. All right. So, with that being said, also, hopefully next time she's on, well, not next time she's on, because I think we're doing another episode this week, but the week after, she's going to do a couple with me. Like, one or two times a month, she's going to hop on, because she has recording stuff, and she really enjoys it. So, mm-hmm. hopefully, I'm not going to make any promises of a permanent edition again, just in case this falls through again. I can't handle that. But yeah, with that being said, you can follow me on Instagram at yourworstnightmaretcp. Send me a Gmail, yourworstnightmaretcp@gmail.com. You can become a patron and give me money because I need money to put this shit out at patreon.com/yourworstnightmaretcp. I have a TeePublic shop now that is all uploaded on my, it should be in my Instagram bio and in the show description. So that is all there. Please send me emails with case suggestions. I already said the email, right? YourWorstNightmareTCP@gmail.com.
Yes.
In case I haven't said it, I think I already did, but, you know. Case suggestions, listener stories. I really want to do listener stories. I only have one person that sent me some, and I have some of my own that I want to share, but if I want to make it, like, an actual thing where I post them a lot, or, you know, I want to do them on the 13th of every month, and I can't do that unless I have a good amount. So please send those in. I won't think any story is, like, too dumb or not scary enough to read on the podcast, so please send them in. And with that being said, yeah, I will, hopefully be getting everything out on time by Saturday at 10 p.m. next week, which I don't know what day that is, like, what the date is for that. I think it's, like, the 14th or something.
That's the 16th, because it's my birthday.
Oh my god, it's the 16th, because it's Addie's birthday. I'm an asshole. Happy Libra season, guys.
It's Libra season.
All right, yeah. I never know how to end these things. Bye, I guess.
Bye.
Bye.
You're cute.
Thanks. You're cute, too.